Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive?
Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right, it's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out-of-state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real-life case studies, and so much more in bonus content.
Oh yeah, did we mention you have lifetime access?
My goodness! If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience.
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 67. A couple quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this on. This will definitely help us move up in the rankings and reach more people. So thank you in advance for helping us in that way. If you'd like to get the latest updates on what's happening at the Black Real Estate Dialogue, text BRED to 21,000 to join the free VIP text list. Also, if you'd like to gain early access to episodes, bonus content, discounts on merch, and more, join our Patreon program. Visit patreon.com/Black Real Estate Dialogue to join or visit the link in the show notes. This episode is sponsored by the Bread Real Estate Investing Community. If you're looking for a group of like-minded individuals and access to experienced real estate investors, look no further. We have 2 masterclasses per month that are taught by experienced real estate investors, unlimited access to our library of past guest speaker recordings, access to our private Slack channel to engage in discussion and network with those in the community, share resources, and support one another. So definitely, it is a great, great, great community. It's only $1 a day. If you'd like to join, click the link in the show notes and it'll take you there, or you can go to blackrealestatedialogue.com. So our second speaker of March, Lamon Woods, this week dropped so much game. He pulled the whiteboard out and he talked us through step by step how he finds deals, how he negotiates deals. And as a bonus, he walked through the different ways that he finances deals. So cross collateralization, all types of stuff that I learned from. So I was sitting there as a student. If you join the community, you'll have immediate access to this recording and more. So definitely, definitely take advantage. If you have any questions, hit us up, send us a DM, send us an email, and we got you. All right. This episode with Noah Lawton was a straight banger. I don't know how else to describe it. This brother is in college and he bought an investment property. So, you know, y'all going to get so much game out of this. I'm excited to listen to it again. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I'm very excited about this episode. I've been looking forward to it. Here with me, I have Noah Lawton out of Greensboro, North Carolina. Noah, thank you so much for coming on to the show. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Definitely. Definitely. So first, Noah, just introduce yourself. Let the people know who you are, where you're from, all that good stuff.
So my name is Noah Lawton. I'm actually from Raleigh, North Carolina. I was born in Boston, but raised in Raleigh. And then now I'm in Greensboro for college. I'm a freshman at UNC Greensboro.
Awesome. Awesome. And a freshman who recently bought an investment property, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah, this is a little mind-blowing. It kind of hasn't hit me yet, but about a month ago, I did.
Definitely, definitely. So before we jump into that, you know, tell us more about your childhood, what that was like. It wasn't too long ago, what that was like, what you saw, or maybe what you didn't see that ultimately shaped your view of building wealth.
My childhood I can't complain at all. I grew up really family oriented. You know, me being from Haiti, you know, we're really, really family oriented. We grew up around my cousins. A lot of my cousins are like siblings to me. We're that close. So super family oriented. So I'm big on family. But I would say from a money perspective, growing up in my community, at least, there wasn't a lot of ownership. And I think I caught on to that from early age. And that kind of drew me to, as I got older, to fall in love with ownership. So I'm big on ownership. I like to preach that to people. So that's kind of where I've developed that love for that.
Definitely. Definitely. That's great, man. I didn't know your family was from Haiti. My family's from Haiti, too. My parents.
Oh, really?
Both my parents.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Actually, my mom's side of the family. My mom was born in Haiti.
Oh, cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's dope. Man, sac passé. not definitely, man. Cool, man. So you just turned 19. You recently bought a property right near where your school is at. How does that? How do you even get to a point at 19 to think, hey, I want to buy a property? Because most people are thinking, hey, I'm trying to go to the party on Friday, or I'm just trying to study or be part of this club. And work my campus job. Like, where did that even come from at that age? I assume most of your peers are not thinking like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a mindset that I would say I've developed from my peers. I mean, some of my peers that, you know, have certain mindsets that I draw off of. But I would say that, especially the real estate, that just came from me doing my own research and me falling in love with different things that are entrepreneurial, to where I've drawn out my goals. And whenever I'm in the position where I can accomplish one of them, you know, it's just something I feel like I have to do. So that's been one of my goals for a while. And I mean, I hit it early, but you know, that's something I've wanted to do for a while. So
definitely. That's great. So we all know the stereotype, or what's mostly the reality for most people, the broke college student. Right. So how does a quote unquote broke college student? So, you know, you mentioned that, you know, you did your research. But I guess from there, it's like, all right, you knew you wanted to do it. What was the next step for you? How did you figure out, all right, I'm gonna get this money like this? Or how did you figure that aspect out?
It was actually before college. It was kind of like a step by step. So, I mean, it all started before I turned 18, when I was working fast food jobs, and I would take those paychecks and just save those paychecks, not really spend them. I never really went shopping or would go out or anything. I would just work, go to school, and that's it. And then I got to the point where I had enough money saved up, or I could start doing these different entrepreneurial things. So I remember I started dropshipping. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of dropshipping.
Can you explain it for those who may not be aware?
Right. Yeah. So dropshipping is like it's a type of e-commerce where basically you take a product from a manufacturer and you buy that product at wholesale and you sell at retail, and your expenses are like the product cost, advertising, and you get to market up at retail and at your expense of advertising. So I really like e-commerce. So I kind of fell in love with that process of e-commerce, and I've been through a lot of stores that were not successful at all. So I think my last store that was pretty successful, I think I did around $50,000 in revenue. That store was my 20th store, or my 21st store, I think, that I opened. And I had about 19 of those stores, or 18 of those stores, with no profits, no sale, nothing. Mm-hmm. Just straight starting them, failing and learning something and moving to the next one. And so I kind of took the money that I made from working, dumped it into e-commerce, and then the profit from e-commerce, that's what I kind of used to start day trading a little bit, swing trading, option trading. And I hit a pretty big trade in the latter part of the month or the year last year. And that's kind of what launched me into my first property.
Got it. So you said 21 stores. So what happened with the first 20? And What happened with the first 20? Like, what was that journey like? And what made you continue to want to keep pushing until something hit?
For me, it was just, you know, when something's proven, I feel like the dropshipping was a proven model. And I know that it wasn't the dropshipping. It wasn't like me. I know I'm not perfect at everything I do. So I know that me trying dropshipping and then not working wasn't on dropshipping. It was me. So every time I would start a store and something would fail, I would just use it as like a learning experience and then jump into the next store and then take what I learned and then learn something else and jump until eventually. Eventually, I got like 15 stores deep and I finally got a sale. I think I had 3 sales, but for some reason, it just wasn't working. So I cut that store off. And that was kind of motivation because I probably would have called it quits after that. But that was the motivation enough for me to be like, okay, I can keep going. I finally got a sale. So after like 15 something stores, that's when I finally got a first sale. And then I remember my store that was pretty big. That was kind of surreal after like seeing $1,000 days and then doing that like for the whole month. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's awesome, man. What products were you selling on that last store?
Oh, it was actually an acne product, it was like a little pen. It was like this big electronic pen with an LED light. It's supposed to be for acne treatment. Yeah.
Got it. And I guess, how do you figure out how to like run the ads or how do you figure out how to market as a dropshipper? Because, you know, a lot of people might be thinking, it's not like you have the product in your hand, right? So it's like the way to advertise it is different potentially.
Right.
So I guess, how did you work through some of those things?
So, it's kind of a process. So when you choose a product, you kind of have to hire somebody to make your ad creative because, you know, we don't have the product in hand, kind of have to surf the internet and pick clips together to make that advertisement. So that's kind of pretty standard for every store. Most dropshippers will do that. Some higher level people will order the product in and make their own advertisements. If you want to be different, most people will just surf the internet, take different clips and put those together. And that's what I did for most of my stores. And then, Facebook ads that's kind of like the big monster nobody wants to tackle. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what hindered me from making money on those first 20 some of the stores, just because I never wanted to learn Facebook ads. I felt like I never had the time or never put enough time into dropshipping to learn it. But once it really pays off, and that would be my advice to anybody that wants to dropship, really learn Facebook ads, because that's really what makes the difference. So that was the difference between having a store that was doing $50,000 to a store that was doing $0, no sales. And that was Facebook ads is a big difference. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. So this is a trend I'm picking up here. You seem to be a very, very disciplined and very intentional person. You know, from working at the fast food restaurants and jobs in high school and saving as much as you can, and then rolling that into starting drop shipping and experimenting with that, and just sticking it through until you found something that hit. And I feel like a lot of people, they really just give up. You know, they give up when things don't work out at first. But I think, you know, we're very early on in the story still, but I think one of the main takeaways at this point is you just got to keep pushing, right? You got to keep going and believe that you will get to a point where you have, you know, you learn from all the previous experiences. And then when something hits, you're ready. You know what I mean? So I think it's very good that you stuck with that.
Right, exactly. That's what it's about, you know, to be able to have that preparation in place to when it actually does hit, you're ready so that you're not caught off guard. A lot of people, in my opinion, a lot of people don't plan for success so that when they do have success, they're kind of like shocked and like, oh, I wasn't expecting this. But for me, I'm like, I've been here before. I know what to expect and now I can scale this. So that's kind of the game plan I follow.
Definitely. So drop shipping hit, you hit store 21 or 20?
21 or 20.
You hit store 21. Yeah. Then you're like, all right, cool. This is going well. And then you get into trading. So options, swing trading and so forth. What made you, what was it for you that was like, all right, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to go here to try to make it a little bit larger. What made you want to do that?
Actually, I've always even before the dropshipping, I've always like been drawn to the stock market. I mean, I had a super small, not super small, but a relatively small portfolio right at like after my 18th birthday last year. So like a year from now, I turned 18, opened up a brokerage and I threw like some money in there and had a small portfolio. And I had a bigger portfolio after March. I went shopping around when the market dropped. I bought up a lot of stocks and my portfolio was heavy airline and cruise stocks, which paid off pretty well. And then so I did have some prior stock knowledge, and I also always did research on stocks, and I was always watching videos and reading books about stocks. So it was just, for me, it was just waiting for the opportunity. So I think I cashed out my portfolio in like August. And then around August was also when dropshipping that store, when I was done with that store. So I got into trading like options and more risky day trades and swing trades. And that's around in October is when I jumped into that longer term. It was like a 2 month swing trade. That was the pretty big trade.
Definitely. What company was it with?
It was with the merger. It was a SPAC. So the company merged with a company called Canoe, say EV car company, and they're it's a pretty good company. I mean, I've done a lot of research on that particular company just because I had to, because I was in it so heavy. But it's a pretty interesting company. They're an electric car company, and yeah, cool company. And I jumped in that trade with it was straight options, no shares. I think I had 138 contracts, and I got them for pretty low, and I just held, didn't sell. There were times. I remember one day I woke up and I was down like 50%, and I was like, "Whoa, what in the world?" And I was tempted to like, "Okay, this is not gonna work out."
Yeah.
And then I held for like two more months, and that was a pretty big trade. Yeah.
Definitely, that's awesome, man. So, talk to us about when you got to the point where it's like, "All right, I'm cool, I'm ready. I want to now take this business income and put it into real estate." Talk to us about getting to that point.
For me, I just know that the stock market is pretty volatile, and an asset class like real estate is pretty stable. So if I were to make this much profit in the stock market, it kind of be counterintuitive to throw it back in the stock market, because there's a chance I could lose all of it. So I took some of that profit and put it into real estate, just because I know that money is pretty safe there and has time to appreciate and grow in value. So and I've always loved real estate, so I thought that was a good decision.
Definitely. I hear you. So, you know, you want to invest, you're ready to invest as a 19-year-old. How did you even go about it? Like, how did you go, I need to find the deal. How did you go about that?
For me, it's trial and error. It was funny how it played out. I was actually inquiring about a different property when I found it, the property I closed on. I never seen it on the market before because it was listed incorrectly as a single family. So I was looking for multifamily, so I wasn't interested in single families. So I think a realtor sent it to me, texted it to me, and I told him, "Sure, I'll go look at it. I don't mind." And when I went to look at it, it was a multifamily, and that was when the trade had started hitting off, and I known that I was gonna have this much capital to put down, and then I wasn't able to get the financing I wanted, so I had to go get private money, and that was like a rabbit trail. I talked to so many different lenders and was trying to get pre-approved, and it was tough at my age just because I'm so young. I didn't have the tax returns. I don't have any experience. It's hard for a lender to just give me a couple $100,000. So that was difficult, but I finally got financing. And then that was when I put an offer in, went back and forth a little bit, and then finally closed about a month later.
Man, so walk us through that deal. So you mentioned that you had to get financing and so forth. Can you walk us through how you had to structure that, just given that, as you mentioned, you're brand new, you're 18, 19. Walk us through what the financing aspect was like.
The financing was pretty tough. I had to talk to a lot of different lenders, and they all, for some reason, every lender I talked to didn't really want to finance me on a rental loan. So I actually, at the end of the day, I had to go with a bridge loan. And so it's a 1 year bridge loan. It's a short term loan. So I'll have to either refinance or sell the property before the year is up. And it was it's about 20% down, so pretty standard. And yeah, the interest rate is pretty high. It's like 8.49%. Mm-hmm. So that's not that but my payments are interest only, so it's not too bad. I still cash flow pretty well, but yeah, the financing was pretty difficult.
Got you. That makes sense. Was the unit occupied? Did it need to be rehab? Was it ready to go?
I was ready to go. So all three units were tenant occupied, so I didn't have to do anything tenant wise.
Gotcha.
That was a seamless transition. That was pretty good.
Got it. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So as far as the bridge loan, so is it basically, do you plan to refinance? I guess if you plan to refinance, what would you need to show to a bank to make you financeable? Like what would that look like?
That's the thing. I don't know if I'll be able to refinance just off the with a bank. I know that I could refinance with a private lender. Like my lender told me that they'll be able to refinance my loan if I were to get that value up to where it needs to be to refinance. But I'm thinking numbers wise, it might be better to sell the property, just because what about cash I have to put into it to do cosmetic rehab and drive the value up might be not worth it at the end. If I was going to do a cash out refinance or just a regular refinance, might be better. It might be more profit to just sell it and take that profit and do another deal.
Got it. So you got some options. I think that's like the great part about real estate, right? Like I always tell people, like I was just talking to somebody earlier. I said, real estate is really about how creative you can get, you know, like right. It's not really about who has the most money. It's about who's the most creative, who's the most persistent and diligent. You know what I mean? Because think about it, right? How many lenders do you think you spoke to before you found one that would work with you?
At least 100. At least 100.
Can you repeat that?
At least 100.
At least 100.
At least.
How many people would call, would get exactly 100 no's before they get a yes?
Exactly. Yeah. Lots of lenders.
So you could have been sitting on cash, but wanting to get a lender. Yeah. But if you weren't persistent enough, you wouldn't have gotten to 101 who said yes. Exactly. You know what I mean? So exactly. It's like the persistence, it's the creativity, because it's like, you know, when you got the deal, you realize it's like, all right, I'm not necessarily lendable at this time, but I got to figure something out to close on this.
Right. Exactly.
And so at that point, you then either have a choice. You walk away or you try to figure out, is there a creative strategy I can employ to try to make this happen for right now? So, you know, I think you did a great job of that too.
Appreciate it. Yeah, exactly. It at the end of the day, it all came down to me being creative and just pushing, trying to get the deal done. Yeah,
definitely. So what was going through your mind? Just the fact that, you know, you're in college, right? Your first or second year, and I'm pretty sure you're studying, you're doing all these things, and you're also trying to close on a property. Like, what was that experience like? Like the average part, the majority of us, right? It's like, you know, work, family, and trying to like do real estate. But you're in school, right? You're a full time student. So what is that like? What is that experience like during that time?
It wasn't too hard. Last semester doing this at the end of the semester, it wasn't bad. It wasn't too bad. I didn't have as many classes as I do now, and I would wake up early. I remember every morning. I would wake up and be on the phone early every morning before class. In the morning, I'd be on the phone and I'd be up all night for the most part. But now it's gotten pretty stressful dealing with tenants and all this paperwork. It's stressful. And I have 18 credits this semester.
Wow.
This semester has been a lot. Yeah.
What's your major?
I have a double major. I have majoring in finance and economics.
Got it. Oh, man. So you're the numbers guy.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's awesome, man. Are you self-managing currently or do you have a property manager?
Self-managing.
Walk me through this. Walk me through this, right? I don't know how old your tenants are, but like, what was that like when they saw you're like, oh yeah, I'm the landlord. Was it like, man, please, you ain't no landlord. Like what was that first interaction like? And what are the interactions like now?
Actually it's crazy. I've met them cause I've been on the property before. Like I was there today, doing a walkthrough and, they went to measure the property. So I was there today, but I don't think that they know that I'm the landlord cause I'm so young. So yeah. I go out there today and I was like, hey, how you doing? They was just like, hey, and it's just, I don't think they know. I think the second unit does know that I'm their landlord though. Because when I communicate with them, they say like, dude, and like, they like try to talk to me like they're, cause they're young as well.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I think they might be seniors in college. So they're like 22, maybe 23.
Yeah.
So they just like talk to me like we're friends. It's like, it's a little weird, but.
I got you. Three units, right?
Yeah, three units.
Got you. Okay. That's cool, man. Man, that's so crazy. Like you're in your dorm room right now and you own a property minutes away. That's like, I'm just trying to think, you know, when I was in college, like when most of us in college, like, you know, we in the dorm room, we in an off-campus apartment, anybody own anything, you know, like right. Nobody was out here buying properties. You know what I mean? So that's crazy, man. How does your family feel about it? Like what were their thoughts? And was there anybody who told you that you're too young to do it early, like during this process?
I mean, family wise, immediate family, outside family, they don't, except for my cousins, my cousins know, but like aunts and uncles, they didn't really know till after. But immediate family, I mean, my mom would tell me that she thinks I'm too young, but in the same sense, she's like, she tells me I can do whatever I want to do. It doesn't really, as long as I don't involve her, she doesn't really care. I mean, she was super happy for me. Yeah. But as far as the process, she was like, why don't you just wait a couple of years? Why don't you wait till you graduate? Focus on your schoolwork. And that's what she'll tell me. But after I closed, she was happy, but she just didn't want anything to do with it while I was going on.
Yeah, I understand. That makes sense. And what about your friends? Like, what is that interaction like? Or is this something that like inspires them? Because I would imagine if one of my boys bought a property when we were freshmen, so sophomores in college, like that would just blow my mind as far as like what's possible. Because I didn't know, like, you know, when I was in college, I had to, like, you know, my senior year, we had a landlord and he owned properties within the town, within the town the school was in. But and I was like, oh, cool. You know, he got some properties, but he didn't look like me, you know, and he right. was obviously not my age. So if I had one of my friends buy a property in where our school was at, that would like change the game for me. I mean, as far as like what we can do in spite of our age. So what is that interaction like now with your friends who are your age or your classmates who are aware What has that been like since you purchased the property?
As far as classmates, a lot of classmates and people that go to the school have reached out to me. I mean, I'm still looking at DMs to this day that from people like, hey, I'm one of your classmates. I go to UNCG, and I still try to answer those. As far as my friends, my friends they definitely don't treat me any different.
Yeah.
But most of my friends are pretty motivated. Most of the people around me are pretty motivated. So it's kind of the same energy that's around me. Everybody's motivated. Everybody's like on the same accord. So it's pretty much the same.
Definitely, man. Definitely. That's awesome. I think, you know, just being able to do this at a young age, man, I think is going to set you up so well in the future. And you know, has it changed anything you want to do like in the future, like what's your career? Like, I guess career wise, you mentioned you're studying finance and economics. Like, what are you interested in pursuing with that degree?
Well, that's a thing. A lot of people ask me like, oh, what do you want to do? And I always tell them if I were to go corporate, I would want to be an investment banker.
Yeah.
But I always say that because at this point, I don't really know if I'll graduate and want to go get a job or still need to go get a job. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I don't want to have to get a job when I graduate. So I always tell people if I do get a job, my dream job is being an investment banker, but I don't plan on having to work when I graduate. Hopefully that's the plan.
Hey, you're on track, man. You got a couple more years left and I'm sure you'll get more properties and increase the portfolio, all that good stuff.
Right. So yeah, actually that's kind of what I think about.
Yeah, definitely, man. So what has been your biggest challenge so far?
Time management, definitely. It gets a little tricky managing the property, having to do with all that stuff, and then in the same go to class and do my schoolwork. That's been pretty difficult. I still have to get better at that.
Definitely. That makes sense. Do you foresee yourself using a property manager, or do you prefer doing it on your own?
Down the line, I probably definitely use a property manager. I just wanted to not use a property manager on this property, just so I can have the experience and the knowledge of how to manage a property myself. If I were to have a portfolio, I'll definitely have a property manager.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. We haven't had guests who invest in Greensboro, I don't believe. We may have had one, but I guess since you're there, tell us more about, I guess, the Greensboro market and what you're seeing from your perspective. And do you think it's a place that people should look into investing in?
Oh yeah, definitely. I like Greensboro. I had actually never been to Greensboro before I came to school here. So it's a lot different than the two main markets, Charlotte and Raleigh. It's not as I would say upkept. A lot of the houses look like they need work, and I feel like it could be one of the top markets if investors were to come here and start remodeling houses and driving up the values in neighborhoods and just coming to invest here and putting money here. I feel like Greensboro could be a pretty good market. I like it already, but in terms of cash flow, it's pretty good. But in terms of values, the home values aren't really too high. So that's something where it could improve. And I think that if more investors were to come here and invest, it probably would go up.
Got it. What are, I guess, from what you can remember, like when you were looking for properties, what are some of the prices that you saw, just like ballpark that you saw within the areas you were looking in?
The areas I was looking in, there are two sides of Greensboro, like the A&T side of Greensboro and then the UNCG side. It's like kind of cut down the middle and the two halves. I was more drawn to the UNCG side. So the multifamilies on this side were kind of in the range of 250 to like 350-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's pretty much
Got it. What kind of rents can people, expect for like apartments out there? I guess investors who are investing.
Right, yeah. To be honest, you won't see too much over 1,000. I think the highest, maybe even on my building, the highest I could probably get is 1,200 for one of the units.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say a good range is like in the 600 to the 1,000 maybe.
Got it. That's not bad.
That's not bad, but that's pretty standard in Greensboro. Yeah, my building, the first unit rents for 800, second unit rents for 875, the third one rents for 605.
Got it. That makes sense. And are those like, are some of those like long-term tenants, like people have been there forever?
No, they're usually one year leases. They're all right now on 1 year leases.
Got it. Okay. Got you, man. So that moment when you got the keys, right? When you signed everything and you're like, man, this is my crib now. How did you feel in that moment? Like, was it, I'll let you tell it.
It did feel really good. I'm not gonna lie. When I signed everything closing and I walked out and it was like, okay, you're done. That felt good. But for me, I don't know. I feel like I had prepared for it so that when it happened, it was kind of like, okay, I expected to be here. Like, what's next? So
yeah.
When I walked out of the law firm, it's not like, okay, I was thinking like, what am I going to do next? That's going to propel me forward. So that's kind of, I was kind of forward thinking. I feel like I got excited for the closing before the closing, so that after I closed, I was just ready to take the next step.
Definitely, definitely. What advice would you give to someone who's in your shoes, right? Someone who is in college, who's thinking about investing, but feels that, you know, there's no way it can happen at this age. What would you say to that person?
I would say definitely to take that first step. I think that's what separates the people that actually do it and the people that definitely take that first step, because mm-hmm. a lot of people just analyze, research, and never take that first step. And then that's just like, to me, that's just a waste of time. And I feel like the best way to learn is just taking that first step. A lot of people get caught up in just learning. So I would definitely say take that first step, and it'd definitely be worth it. Even if you don't get anywhere in your first time, second time, third time, definitely take that first step.
Man, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that's significantly important. You know, a lot of times, right, especially in our communities, a lot of us are lifetime renters, right? A lot of our families don't own, maybe they did at some time, but that's just not the stand. That's not the story for everybody, right? So real estate, owning a house seems like this big insurmountable thing, this big goal that may never happen. But to your point, I like what you said about just taking that first step. You know, a lot of times it's really just about what is one thing I can do? Like, is it reading a book? Is it listening to something? Like, what can you do to get closer and closer to taking the ultimate action? You know, and there's literally there's nothing too small. There's no progress that's too small, you know?
Right.
For example, we could look at your story. Like, you started with the drop shipping, you know, and I assume it's not something you need very much, if very much capital to start, right? So, you know, that could be a step somebody could do. You know, somebody yeah. could maybe start a small portfolio, start trading, or start yeah. using some of the other gifts to generate some income, especially as a college student, right. to maybe do the same thing you did. So I definitely agree.
Right. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly as well. Yeah.
Definitely. So what does the future look like for you, Noah, like real estate wise? Obviously, you know, you got a full course load right now, double major. So I guess in terms of real estate, like what do you see? Like, have you thought about the next couple of years and different things you might want to do within real estate?
I've actually thought about in terms of the next couple of months, what I plan to do. So I'm kind of thinking of different exit strategies for this particular property. I know that if I were to, especially in this hot market, if I were to turn around and sell it now as kind of a flip, the profit it'd be a nice profit. And I'd probably use that profit to propel me into my next project. But I think where I want to go, especially me being young and me being a beginner investor in real estate, at least, I think revenue might be more important than cash flow at this point. Mm-hmm. So it might be smarter for me to go in terms of like more fix and flips and things that are going to bring hard revenue in my pockets rather than cash flow, especially at my age and where I'm at right now. So I think I might switch course a little bit instead of being trying to think long-term buy and hold. Might just go flip route, because I think that it might be easier for me to do a couple flips a year than maybe one buy and hold every other year or something like that. So I might be able to drive up revenue quicker that way.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah, I hear you. Because the thing about it, right? You have 2-3 years left in college?
3 years.
3 years. So you have 3 years left in college. So imagine, to your point, like imagine like a few flips a year, you'll be in a pretty good place to go for the big piece of fish when you graduate, you know what I mean? And I'm sure like during that time you could work on like being financeable and all that. I'm sure it gives you time. Yeah. I would say to work on all those things, and you could really be a big player by the time.
Exactly. That's kind of my goal. I was talking about this earlier. I like to sit down and think and draw like game plans. Mm-hmm. So I think my next course of action would probably be doing fixing flips and holding some of those. If I can burr some of those and refinance and be able to pull my cash out, I'd probably hold a couple to where when I graduate, I do have a small, like a pretty nice size portfolio of rentals fixing flips that I've completed that give me capital to where when I graduate, I can go after like the bigger fish, like apartments and syndications and bigger apartments and things like that.
That's man, you're on your way. You're about to own the whole city by the time.
That might be the goal a little bit. Yeah, I think I do like Greensboro a lot. I want to eventually get into Raleigh and Charlotte, but right now I see a lot of opportunity in Greensboro, so I want to take advantage of that opportunity.
Hey man, you know, a lot of times you know, we've had guests on the show and just in general, like a lot of times, you know, if you see the opportunity ahead of other people, it could be a great thing. You know, I I haven't heard many people talking about Greensboro. So, you know, I definitely feel like you're onto something. You know, it's not one of those, like, people probably talk more so about Charlotte than Raleigh, but it seems like Greensboro, there's some good things happening, good investment opportunities. So I think you're on your way, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so. I agree. I was talking to somebody else about that. And for me, I think Greensboro is a lot of, this is so much diversification in Greensboro. To me, Greensboro kind of mimics Atlanta, like a smaller scale Atlanta. There's a lot of Black professionals here in Greensboro who want to do better than where they're at now. So it's like a lot of Black entrepreneurs, a lot of Black people in college that are doing well for themselves. For me, I see a lot of hope in Greensboro.
Definitely. Definitely. That's great, man. Man, this has been a really dope interview. Like I tell you off camera, man, I'm blown away. You know, I wasn't thinking about buying property when I was 19. I didn't think I could ever buy property at that age. Like I didn't know if it was possible at all. And so, you know, you're definitely changing the narrative, man. With, you know, what the steps you took to get to this first deal, and the creativity you used to pull it off. Man, it's just inspirational. And I think it's just a testament to just continuing to try. Like, you called over 100 lenders. You tried drop shipping until like the 21st store. You know, you got into the trades, and, you know, it's just a testament to just persistence, creativity, and just taking another step forward, man. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to doing an update with you. You know, down the road. And I just know, you know, you're going to do some big things, man. This is just the beginning.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, to go back to which that's kind of the goal. I do want to show people that, you know, it's possible. You know, ownership in our community is definitely possible. So that's the bigger picture for sure.
Definitely, man. So, any parting words, anything you want to share with the people, and also let us know, at the end of that, where everybody can reach you.
For sure. I just want to say thank you for having me. It's been a blast being on the podcast. It was super enjoyable. And then you can follow me on Instagram. My username is just at Noah Lawton. It's NoahLawton.
Awesome. Awesome. Noah, thank you so much for coming on the show. Truly do appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. If you'd like to get access to our courses and everything we have to offer, all the information links, go to blackrealestatedialogue.com. If you want to stay up to date on what we have going on, text BRED to 21,000. And then lastly, if you'd like to join the Bread Real Estate Investing Community, go to blackrealestatedialogue.com and you can access that. Thank you all again. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. We ask that you kindly not be that guy, and instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone from their top brands in any condition on any unlimited plan for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 with Galaxy AI.
With new line on my plan, additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.